In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
The AJC's trusted veteran political voices, Greg Bluestein, Patricia Murphy, Tia Mitchell, and Bill Nigut are the essential source for Georgia politics. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Politically Georgia. Sign up for the newsletter, download the podcast, subscribe to the AJC.
Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution with another edition of the Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. It is October 20th, 2020. We have our October 28th. I can't even talk because a hurricane is bearing down upon us. And Atlanta United lost to Orlando 4-1 tonight in a game that they're not eliminated from the MLS playoffs, but they might as well be. It's going to be really, really tough for them to make even the 10th spot now. But that's how it goes. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC, on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now, and as he has so graciously done many, many games over the past 3+ years, Jason Longshore of Soccer Down Here in 92.9 has joined me to break down this game that started so brightly for Atlanta United and then ended as so many of them do.
Yep, that about sums it up. It was frustrating because Atlanta United was on the front foot early on, created chances, looked good. Gave up a goal against the run of play. All right, it's not good. Keep going. Give up a goal on a free kick before the end of the half. It gets worse. He'll come out the second half and look good, and then give up a third goal, and it's done. And then you look dead. And then Kubo Torres finally scores, and then you give up a fourth goal. It takes two deflections and sums up 2020.
Yeah, just to go through the stats really quickly. Atlanta United had 6 shots, I think, in the first 20 minutes, but none obviously went into the goal. And then Daryl DK, who, if there were still a Rookie of the Year award, would probably get it, but now it's been changed, so he's not going to get it, scored in the 29th minute. And no one is – I was trying to ask Glass this, but I couldn't get in the queue in time. What happened between Anton Walks and Fernando Meza on the goal? I can make assumptions as to what happened. But he scored in the 29th minute, and then I thought some of the air went out of Atlanta United's balloon then. And then Chris Mueller was fouled by Lawrence Weick, who was making his second start since March. He took the free kick. It was 30, 35 yards, somewhere in that range.
About 30, great, yeah.
Yeah, great free kick in the second minute of extra time at the end of first half. To give Orlando a 2-0 lead, and at that point, Atlanta United was done. But Tisho Ekundele scored in the 60th minute. He had a goal wiped out after DK's first goal that Atlanta United, another referee might have let it go, but DK's foul on the goal, but it didn't matter. And then Mateus Ayas scored, and that's being generous, in the second minute of stoppage time in the second half. It was a free kick that took 2 deflections before it kind of gradually rolled across the line to give Orlando a 4-1 lead. Atlanta United's goal was scored by Eric Torres, his first goal for the season. It was a header off of a corner kick, I think it was.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was a corner or just a general free kick. But really, 87th minute, it was too little too late. For Atlanta United, 11 shots in the first half, 14 overall, just 3 on goal. And that includes the first shot on goal by Barco that I'm not convinced was actually a shot on goal. Galese saved it. I think if he'd have let it roll, it would have gone wide. But, it doesn't really matter at this point. So at the end of the night, the Eastern Conference teams have all wrapped up their games on Wednesday. Atlanta United drops to 13th in the East. It was in 12th. It has 19 points. It trails 12th place DC United, which has 21 points. It trails 11th place Chicago Fire, which has 21 points. It trails 10th place Inter Miami, which has 21 points. And I'll go ahead and throw in Montreal because Atlanta United could still get 6 points from its remaining two games. It trails the Impact by 4 points. Montreal has 23. Nashville has clinched a playoff spot. Congrats to Gary Smith and the guys in Music City for a great season. So really, Atlanta United, in my opinion, is battling for the 10th spot. I don't think it can hope to get the 9th spot because there's too many teams
right
between it. And Cincinnati, actually, remarkably, is still in play for the 10th spot because it has 16 points. It trails Inter-Miami by 5.
Sunday is essentially a play-in game to keep your hopes alive.
Yeah, again, Inter-Miami has 21 points. Atlanta United hosts Cincinnati on Sunday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And you want to think, well, that's 3 points for Atlanta United, except you can't say that this year because you just can't. We have a season full of stats and data and results to show otherwise. So there were some interesting decisions made by Stephen Glass tonight. Lawrence Wyke in his second start since March at right fullback in place of Brooks Lennon, who has arguably been Atlanta United's MVP this season. I asked Glass after the game why Wyke started, and he said they thought that he gave them more on defense. Ironically, if you want to blame players for goals, Wyke could be blamed for two of the goals allowed. I'm not really into that. But those were just kind of how the stats kind of played out and how the game played out. To his credit, Wyke came on post-game and talked about his performance and admitted that one of the goals was his fault. I don't know how much of the game he can remember because once the players get in these Zoom calls, there's a lot of things rolling through their minds, and it's hard to break down things. Moreno got another start, which I was a little bit surprised by. Barco got another start. Jurgen Damm got another start. And then in one of the bigger surprises, Adam John came in for John Gallagher tonight against Orlando. Again, Atlanta looked good, but just nothing really, really seemed to be clicking. And that's been the case all season.
Yeah, I think they looked their best for a while in this one. When you get that group playing together a little bit longer, you'd expect that. He created 10 chances on the night, which is good. You get to double digits. That's a good night. But you don't get anything to show for it. And that's just the biggest issue here is it feels like in some ways we're back to the MLS's back tournament in that, you know, you lose tonight. You lost your second game against Cincinnati. We had thought, you know, for a long time that you were going to need more than 3 points to get into the next round in that tournament. Uh-huh. Turned out the way all the other results went, if you'd won your last game, you would have got into the next round. Tonight, you get all these other good results going your way. Dallas coming back and beating Miami is good. Miami's going to be missing Leandro Gonzalez-Pires on yellow card accumulation. Potentially Nicolas Figal. I don't know who plays in the back for them in their next match. Francisco Calvo, red carded tonight. He's going to miss Chicago's next match. Like, you had things that fell your way. A win tonight would have been huge. You don't get it. Now it looks like 6 points could get you in, but you got to find 6 points. That's the thing is we talked through all this. It's like, oh, that's good. That's promising. Okay, cool. You haven't won in a while because you're playing better. You're creating more chances. You're not scoring goals early. And it comes down to that. Tonight, the biggest thing for me, I mean, I'm glad Lawrence Wyke came out and talked. That's good for him. I thought he started really well. I thought after the first goal, which in my opinion came against the run of play, I'm with you. I think it's miscommunication between Walks and Meza. Walks had lost DK one time before as well. I don't know how close to 100% Anton Walks was. He came out early in the second half after getting clipped by DK. I don't know if he was anywhere close to 100% to start. Then Wyke had to move at the center back. Wyke was shaky at center back. He was shaky after the goal was conceded. It was a little surprising because I thought he started really well.
Yeah, he was put in a position. It was going to be tough for him to succeed tonight.
He was succeeding up until the first goal. He was really playing well up until the first goal. And then it felt like it knocked his confidence a little bit, and he got hesitant. And in moving to center back, I mean, he's your fifth center back on the depth chart, I think is a safe number to put on him. And I mean, it showed.
Yeah, but that's kind of my point about it was going to be tough for him to succeed because he just doesn't have the experience. And so, you know, any mistake is going to be magnified. He could lose his confidence, and that's what looked to kind of be what happened.
It wasn't
he was probably mistake. Lucky to not get a yellow card early. He ran through an Orlando player and then kind of ran away before the referee could pull out the yellow card, which – it was a smart move by him, but he probably deserved a yellow on the play. But anyway, this is not on Wyke at all. No. This is just a systemic issue with this team all season. It can't score. It did create chances tonight. I'm trying to think. Well, we obviously had Torres' goal. We had the one play that Barco, the ball came to him in the middle of the box. This was in the second half. And I don't know if he got pushed from behind or what, but he never made contact with the ball and ended up rolling into the back of the net.
Yeah, there was a little bit of contact, not enough for a penalty, but there was contact that either he thought it was coming faster, he thought he could draw the penalty there, he mistimed it, I'm not sure. But, yeah, that was one that, man, you'd like to have back.
It was just – it was, you know, anyway. To me, I tweeted this. Barco is not a designated player that is going to carry a team into the playoffs. He's more of a complimentary guy, a TAM guy than a DP. I can understand why Atlanta United paid for him to be a DP 2+ seasons ago, however long it was, but it's just not working out. And it's difficult to, for me at least, to think it's going to work out because we've seen him playing with some of Atlanta United's best players. And now we've seen him when Atlanta United is struggling and it's just not, there's no consistency anywhere. Moreno tonight had some flashes, but it's obvious he's still trying to work on his game legs, work on his chemistry with his teammates. Jürgen Damm started brightly, and then after Orlando got its goal, that kind of negates his abilities because teams can sit back, take away the space that he needs to use that speed, and that's what Orlando was able to do. Rossetto, yeah, I thought started okay and then just kind of disappeared, which has, in my opinion, been the case with him most of the season.
I disagree with you on Rossetto.
Okay.
I mean, the numbers are good on him anyway, but I didn't think he disappeared at all. He's more of a deep-lying player than a Hyndman who is going to show up more in the attacking moments, which if you want that, that's a different conversation. But Rossetto might have missed one pass all night. 95%, I believe, is what his number was. Created chances as well, won tackles. He is the good pair for Mo Adams, who is going to take more chances as a six. If you're playing somebody who's going to stay home more, I think you can get away with Hyndman and Moreno more because Hyndman's going to stay higher. But if you're going to play Adams and try to be more mobile centrally, I think Hossetto is the better pairing with him.
I do agree with that. I thought Adams was probably the man of the match for Atlanta United tonight.
Very good again.
No offense to Torres.
Yeah, he's been very good.
He looked Nagby-like to me in some of his little shimmies and hip swivels and feints and stuff to get out of tight places. He carried the ball forward very well, very aggressively. I thought these are the performances that he can build off of. But I guess this is my – and this is, you know, just looking at stats and things like that. Each of the team's 5 wins this season have come with Hyndman in the lineup. So there's something about having Hyndman as that attacking midfielder and either Lerowitz or Rometty behind him that seems to work for this team in getting 3 points. And I don't know why. I'd have to go back and watch the games.
Yeah, I don't think it's on Hyndman just being there.
No, it's a lot more than that. So I don't know what the total things are. I just know that when Hyndman starts, it's like when the Lerowitz stat last year. When Lerowitz starts for whatever reason, Atlanta United won. When Hyndman starts this season, and they've lost some, they've lost a good bit with him, but their only games they won are when he's in the lineup. And I don't know why, but that's just how it is. So looking at some of the other results tonight, super quick. Red Bulls beat New England 1-0. That really doesn't affect Atlanta United a great deal. Sporting Kansas City beat Cincinnati. Cincinnati had a penalty kick go off the post in their final game at Nippert Stadium. That 3 points from Cincinnati could have buried Atlanta United tonight, but it didn't happen. Orlando, we obviously know, beat Atlanta United 4-1. Philadelphia rallied from a 1-1 draw to beat Chicago, which was playing with 10 men for most of the game. They won that 2-1. NYCFC beat Toronto, which is really, really struggling right now, 1-0.
Beat up Toronto team.
Yeah, yeah. DC United continued its hot streak with, what does it have now, 7 points or 10 points in its last four games. And adding a little bit of insult to injury, it was Yamil Lassad to Julian Gressel on their winning goal against Columbus tonight. Minnesota beat Colorado 2-1, which doesn't really matter as I'm reading across the sports strip on MLSsoccer.com. And then FC Dallas beat Miami 2-1. And I bring this one up because Miami's place is obviously important to Atlanta United. But FC Dallas's goal was scored because Leandro Gonzalez Perez was called for a penalty in the box. Dallas got the penalty kick and converted. So what Gressel and Assad did to hurt Atlanta United, karma turns around and Leandro Gonzalez Perez helps Atlanta United by gifting gifting Dallas a chance at a goal.
I'm assuming that's where he picked up his yellow that put him over the limit as well.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of a weak penalty. But referees at this point, I just give up on. A couple of other just kind of funny results. Portland is beating LA Galaxy 3-1. They were already up 3-0 at the end of the first half. You got to figure Skeleto's days are gone.
Galaxy quit on him, it looks like.
Yeah, LAFC is beating Houston 2-0. And San Jose off a wonder strike from Chris Wondolowski, and I'm being sarcastic because it was like a one-yard tap-in, are beating Real Salt Lake 1-0.
Hey, Wanda's made a living on those.
I know. That was kind of why I was being sarcastic. So, Atlanta United. It can beat Cincinnati. Can it beat Columbus?
The way Columbus is playing right now, yeah. The way Atlanta's playing right now, no. It's got to be better. I mean, Columbus has been poor for a little while now. I think the idea that Columbus was the best team in the East left us back at the beginning of the fall.
Yeah, and I thought they would be, but they've struggled. They've won one of their past seven.
Yeah, they've had injuries, and that's definitely hurt them. Everybody has. I mean, it's just kind of the story of 2020. Yeah, I mean, if Cincinnati can beat Columbus, Atlanta can beat Columbus, but Atlanta's got to just score goals. Like, it's there's no more analysis to do. There's no more breaking down of, you know, the chances need to come from the left side, from the right side, and this and that. It's down to getting the job done. Yep. I mean, it sounds simplistic, but it's still there for you on the table. You know, everybody else should have picked up points tonight. You should have been looking at probably, you know, being done by the end of the night. You're not. You actually do still have a door open. You look at the results you need, they're not crazy to expect. I mean, it's not like anybody outside of DC in this combination of teams we've talked about is playing well. DC's the hottest team out of this group.
Yeah, so let's look at their remaining schedules. We'll start with Miami first. They have to go on the road to a Toronto team that has lost two consecutive.
But they might not have a starting center back on the field.
Right. And then they're at home against Cincinnati, which that is a huge, huge game. Yep. So that's going to be really tough for Atlanta United. DC goes to New England in its next game, and New England is winless in its past three. And then it finishes versus Montreal, and that could be the game to decide the final playoff spot.
That's the one when you really start to go like picking results and who's going to be favored, this and that. It really could come down to you needing a win on the final day in Columbus and that match needing to be a draw.
Yep. Montreal hosts Orlando and then is at as we said, DC United. At Audi Field, which apparently is like letting the grass grow to the rough at my golf course here in Carrollton, Sunset Hills, the past few games, based upon
they're a pretty slow team, so I can't really blame.
I mean, I can remember when Atlanta United went there, and it literally the grass looked like it was 3 inches thick, tall.
I remember. They mowed it after the game. It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah. It looks like they're back to doing that again. So I just, you know, I would love for Atlanta United to make the playoffs because it gives me more things to write about and more things to do. But looking at the remaining schedules and the current form and things like that, I just can't – I don't see it happen.
You know, it's funny. Like, looking at the current schedules, I can absolutely see it happening. Looking at the way Atlanta United is playing at the moment, I can't see it happening. That's the frustrating thing about the way these last three have gone. You know, Toronto, you should have gotten a point. You didn't. A late goal killed you. You should have, going into it, beaten DC. You didn't. You came back to get put yourself in a position for a point. You threw that away. Tonight, you played better than you probably did in those last two games. And you lost 4-1. You know, like, it's frustrating because this team should be getting results in those last three games that would put them in a different position, but they have zero to show for it. And now they have to play better than that and get results in these last two and have to hope for some help. Some of it's reasonable help. Some of it you're going to need a little bit of luck. That it really could come
a lot of it you're going to need a whole lot of luck.
I don't think you need a whole lot of luck. That's where I disagree. Like, I think where you look at it, I can see the results falling their way. It really feels like the MLS's back tournament, where I was having this conversation with Mike Conte going into the last day, and he was like you in saying, you know, even if they win tonight, it's not going to be enough. And I'm like, I can see the results falling their way very easily. And ultimately they did. If they had won against Columbus in that tournament, they would have moved on. Even, you know, the way they played, if they'd won that last game, they'd have moved on. I can see them winning these games. I can see the other results happening. But the way they're currently playing, I just don't know what changes it. I don't know what it is that changes this team getting the first goal.
Well, it's, I think Miami's getting 3 points against Cincinnati.
Yeah, and that's still not enough to bury you. That's the thing. Is like, that game, yeah, that is the one that you look at and you say, okay, one of these teams in this,
and either,
this gaggle of teams,
either is DC be United or Montreal are going to get 3 points, and that's
not necessarily.
Well, they play each other.
I know, but you have a draw. Well,
even 1 point though is that. I mean, yeah,
could be the one that does it. Like, that's the thing, is it could fall that way. It really easily could, but none of that matters. Because you have to do something you haven't done in a long time, which is win back-to-back games.
The first two games of the season.
Yeah. You got to score first. Yeah. It feels so much more magnified than it's been. You've got to score first. And we haven't seen that in a while, have we?
No. Their last win, Atlanta United scored first. And that came –
DC?
Yeah, DC. Ford, was it DC?
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. It was DC. That is crazy. Yeah, they're just I think it's a team needing leaders. It's a team needing someone to get on the field and just threaten to whoop somebody's butt if they don't do what they're supposed to do. And they don't have that right now.
Nope.
But that's neither here nor there. All right, Jason, what do you have upcoming?
Tomorrow, Overreaction Thursday. I'm sure it's going to be loads of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited. Tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, twitch.tv/soccerdownhere, the Soccer Down Here app, which you can download for Android or iOS, soccerdownhere.net. You can listen and watch. I'm as frustrated as anybody else. I wish I knew what to tell you that would fix it. I wish I had the magic formula. I don't. It's frustrating. It's very, very frustrating. And this was the game that kind of, encapsulated it. I'll tell you what I was hoping for in that about 20 minutes after the Orlando third goal and Kubo Torres's goal. I wanted somebody to kick an Orlando player. It was getting to that point where it was like, you need somebody to show that you're angry about the way this is going. Because even though you played your best game of the three that you've lost here, it doesn't matter. You're down 3-0 your rival. Like, you needed somebody to show anger. Eric Rometty did a little bit when he came on.
Yeah, he did.
But that's the little things. Those are the intangibles that we can go through stat sheets, you know, for days, and they don't show up. They're not in there. That this team lacks at times. They lack a little bit of that fire, that nastiness that they need to have in these moments. They've got to find it before Sunday. They've got to, or they can't get what they need. They've got to find that to get 6 points in these last two games.
So what would get the team – I have an idea as to – and I don't know if I'm going to share it – as to what would get the team fired up.
You got to share it in a written column, Doug. You got to get people to,
well,
to
come – let me ask you first. Now, I hate doing that. What would get the team fired up? Because the playoffs, the idea of making the playoffs don't seem to be getting the team fired up. What would get the team fired up? And I will point out, Stephen Glass has already said – the guys are playing for their jobs for the next manager, and that doesn't seem to get them fired up. What would get them fired up?
I don't know. That's the thing, is you're at the point where it feels like you would normally have a captain or a player in the locker room make it clear that this is do or die this weekend. And I don't know who that is. I don't know. And that, you know, everything else has been laid on the table. You're right. I mean, it's obvious that people are playing for jobs because, you know, when you have a season like this, you're not going to have everybody come back. There's not a whole lot else, you know, left. There's no more threats to make, you know. It feels like it's got to come from inside the locker room at this point. And I just don't know who is going to make that speech, who is going to say those things. And the hard thing is you don't really have – I mean, Friday, I hope, I guess, you'll have a full training session. And it feels like that's got to be it. You've got to have something happen Friday that makes this team look differently in the beginning stages on Sunday. It's got to come on Friday. There's no other time for it.
Here's one thing that would – maybe get the guys fired up. Maybe. And I only bring it up because it happened last year. If someone were to announce their retirement, this is it for me. Maybe that would get the guys fired up.
Maybe.
At this point, I don't know who that would be. And I want to bring this up because I'm so tired of seeing this tweet. It's much like the Play Carlton tweets in 2017 and the Play Huzetu tweets earlier this season and the – oh, God. I mean, there's been 1,000 of them. But now it's and this has been going all season, blaming Frank DeBoer for the tearing apart of last year's team to this year. So,
oh, that's a new one?
No, it's been going all season. Frank DeBoer, if – this team supporters thought that Frank DeBoer wanted to see two of the best midfielders and Julian Gressel and Hector Villalba be traded and sold. You're nuts. If he wanted to see Leandro Gonzalez Perez sold, you're nuts. If he did, he wouldn't have started him after the MLS All-Star game. That's a fact. And he continued to start him because he played well. Coaches aren't dumb, and Frank didn't hold grudges. Let's go through the rest of the list. Villalba wanted guarantees of playing time. Those could not be made, so he wanted to leave. That's how it is.
And he hasn't performed in Paraguay either.
And he hasn't performed in Paraguay. Who else left that I'm forgetting? I mean, Brandon Vasquez – I would argue that Atlanta United could have done better to keep him on the protected list, but at the same time, he could have been asked to be left unprotected because he probably wanted some playing time. that he couldn't get from Atlanta United, for example. Who else? I'm missing some other players, but those are some of the highlights. You can blame Frank DeBoer for the playing style for last season. That's totally fine, and I wouldn't argue with you. But to blame him for blowing up of the team is just factually wrong. And so just let it go.
That one doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you look at it for more than 2 minutes.
I'm just tired of writing the same tweet over and over and over again. And what else do we have? We're going to have Atlanta United availability, I assume, on Friday because the game is on Sunday. I'll have a follow tomorrow. You've got this podcast. You've got the game story. You've got what was said. I've got to figure out a sidebar because I can't keep writing the same thing over and over again. But I guess I'm going to have to, as to there are still 6 points to play for, which would be a playoff spot more than likely. All right, Jason, how do people find you on social media?
I'm at Longshoe on all of the social media platforms except for TikTok. I don't do any TikTok or Snapchat, so you're not going to find me there. You can also follow Soccer Down Here at Soccer Down Here on all of those same platforms.
Are you on Exchangeagram? Are you on that platform?
I know that one.
You need to watch The Internship or Interns or whatever it was. Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn. That was their idea. They're interns at the equivalent of Google.
Right.
And he comes up with the idea for Exchangeagram, which is basically Instagram. But he doesn't know Instagram, and all the kids are getting mad at him because he keeps saying the same things over and over again, and they keep saying that's Instagram, and he keeps saying, no, it's Exchangeagram. So I always throw that out to my kids just to make them mad. So here, let me ask you this real quick before I let you go. Why does San Jose's field have bright neon green spots all over it?
What now? Say that again?
San Jose's field, that the beautiful, you know, field at the end of the airport with the world's longest bar.
Yeah.
Has little neon green spots all over it, and it always has. And I don't know why. And I put it out there on Twitter, and somebody who may be an agronomist actually answered the question, but I don't want facts. I want like fun, humorous theories. So I'm looking for a fun, humorous theory for you.
Okay. I remember when we were there in 2018, there were a whole bunch of large birds pecking at the ground before the game. It was very strange. I thought maybe there's like, I don't know, worms or other bugs or things that have found their way into the field, and birds are maybe picking at it and the grass is growing back weird. I don't know. That's my theory.
Was it California condors? Because that would be really cool.
I don't think they were that big.
Oh, come on. Just say they were condors. Just say they were condors.
Maybe they were baby condors.
Okay, I'll take that. Now, someone said it's actually a mix of, and I don't know why this is true, it's a mix of Bermuda grass with the rye grass, and way back in the day, California outlawed Bermuda grass as a noxious weed that interfered with field crops. This is according to Embriano Jr. on Twitter, at Imbrianojr.
On I know
Twitter.
Him.
So go to him for all of your agronomy questions, especially regarding MLS stadiums.
Excellent.
So there you go. All right. Well, let's wrap this nonsense up because I've been talking way too much. Orlando 4-1, October 28th, 2020. Atlanta United remains on 19 points. It's got some work to try to accomplish to make it to the MLS playoffs. Jason is slightly more optimistic than I am. There is a hurricane coming into the state tomorrow. Please be safe for that and for COVID. Please vote if you haven't already done so. Please subscribe to soccerdownhere.net. Please follow Jason on social media and Twitter, as well as Mike Conti and John Nelson and the guys at Dirty South and the guys at Siempre and the guys at Mouths of the South and The Athletic and Dirty South Soccer, and Joe Patrick, and Rob Usery, and Sam Jones. And if you're listening to this from outside Atlanta, follow your local newspaper because they need your subscriptions for a whole lot of reasons. Atlanta United 4-1 losers to Orlando City tonight. Two games left at least in this MLS season.
I'm Ernie Suggs, race and culture reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
And I'm Ned Ravone, lifestyle columnist. Atlanta has been known as the Black Mecca for so many years, but that means something different to everybody.
It means everything to me. I've been living here for 24 years, and I am still amazed at how rich the city's Black culture continues to grow. Every day I wake up, I learn something new.
Well, you all can learn something new by subscribing to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's new newsletter called Unapologetically ATL. It's all about the people, the events, and the entertainment happening in Metro Atlanta that Black people might want to know about.
Like historically Black colleges and universities.
Atlanta's thriving art scene.
And the city's growing neighborhoods.
Wherever you live, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what issues are important to you.
So subscribe today at www.ajc.com/unapologeticallyATL.
Only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.